Right, good morning. Welcome to the H2 Operator Caribbean, a podcast from the Caribbean Water and Sewage Association dedicated to discussing all things about water and wastewater in water sector in the Caribbean region. And I'm your presenter, Ignatius Jean, Executive Director at CAWASA. And this is the fourth episode in our COVID-19 podcast series. Our guests today are from the Operators Without Borders based in British Columbia, Canada. And I have much pleasure to extend a warm Caribbean welcome to Ms. Valerie Jenkinson, who is no stranger to the Caribbean, and her Operators Without Border colleagues. And I will invite her to introduce herself and the members of her team.
Good morning, everybody. And I'm sure there's a lot of old friends that are going to be listening to this. So I extend all my greetings to you and hope that you're all staying safe in this very challenging times that we're facing right now. I'm not able to get back to the Caribbean, no flights just yet, and might be a little while, but you are in my thoughts and prayers. I'm delighted to be able to work with Ignatius this morning in this podcast, and I'm joined by my colleagues Ron Enns and Madeline Bouchler, Madeline is our secretary with Operators Without Borders. She was on our founding board, and she's been invaluable to Operators Without Borders because as a lawyer, she's been able to guide us through the registration as a Canadian nonprofit, as an NGO, but she also has a background in education. She has a master's of continuing education and has been able to help with us, especially right now as we're moving to online platforms. Madeline was the director of operations and training, or director of training for the British Columbia Water and Wastewater Association, and she has a long background in water. She's an associate faculty member with Royal Roads University, where she distributed learning programs, and a highlight of which was holding a workshop for representation of 10 different African countries for delivering and facilitating learning at a distance, adapting modalities for existing resources. So welcome, Madeline. And the other person who's joining me this morning is Ron Enns, who used to be with the City of Vancouver as an operator, but has always had, like the rest of us, a passion for education. And so started teaching part-time for the BC Water and Wastewater Association and World Water and Wastewater Solutions, the company that most of you know me from. He was an instruction team that we put together for Belize, and Ron's going to talk a little bit about that with Operators Without Borders. And in 2006, he was asked to join the City of Vancouver's Heavy Urban Search and Rescue Team Canada Task Force, which began a long training regimen that included first responder, confined spaces, rope, trench rescue, etc. He is a FEMA certified instructor, of which I'll talk a little bit about that as well. And in 2012 was seconded to the Justice Institute of British Columbia for 4 months to help develop the trench rescue and structural collapse and other courses, and received his instructor and evaluator certification. He's currently on the executive board member of the BC Common Ground Alliance, member of the Education Committee, and a presenter for the BC Ground Disturbance Seminars. So as you can see, he's got a tremendous history. He is now the training manager for Kwantlen University and directs all the training for water and wastewater operators throughout BC and the Yukon and other places virtually. So I'm absolutely delighted that we have those people with us this morning. I'm just going to now.
Well, I should just, before you go on, Valerie, I think you're I should have introduced you and say that you are the chair and founder of the Operators Without Borders, that then you are also the CEO for World Water and Wastewater Solutions Limited, which has been providing consulting and training services in the Caribbean region for over a decade now. So you're pretty familiar with the Caribbean. And you have been nominated twice for Woman Entrepreneur of the Year and is the Global Water Partnerships Caribbean focal point of the year. So we are very pleased to have such a distinguished panel with us, sharing with us with you, the work that you do and how we would be able to partner with you in the Caribbean region in helping to build capacity and for future collaboration with our utilities. So I'm really excited about this morning. So could you tell us a little about the genesis of Operators Without Borders and who you are, what you do, etc.?
Of course, I'd be delighted. And thank you so much, Ignatius, for that. And as you know, I have an absolute passion for capacity building in the Caribbean, and we've worked together for a long time, and it's wonderful. So Operators Without Borders started in 2017 when Burden Etanoff from Dominica was making a presentation to the CWWA convention. I think it was in Trinidad and Tobago. And it was just after Hurricane Maria had devastated the country. And he gave one of the keynote presentations. And afterwards I said to him, Bernard, what do you need? And he said, we need everything. And he said, you know, we've just been wiped out, all our stores have been stolen, but we really could use some help rebuilding. And I was going up to the Canadian Water and Wastewater Association meeting, and I talked to their executive director, Robert Haller, who jumped on board and said, yep, we'll give you space in our conference, you can talk about this. And so Operators Without Borders was born. And I'm just going to share some. So since then, we've made some big response, some big strides. We're now a registered Canadian nonprofit NGO, and I thank Madeline for all the work that she's done on that. And we've presently got over 60 certified operators who have signed up to date to volunteer. And when I talk about certified operators, they are certified under exactly the same program that you run in the Caribbean, Ignatius, through CAWASA, the ABC program. So in Canada, you can't be an operator unless you're certified. You can't be working in a plant unless you're certified. So all these have certified from level 1 to level 4. And most of them who are volunteering have a very high level of expertise. So this, we have two mandates. We're not first responders, but we work in disaster relief. So our mandate there is to go in and help utilities rebuild, and water and wastewater utilities that we're talking about. So we go in as soon as there's some equipment and it's safe to do so, and we are do everything from help doing the assessment, which we've been doing in the Bahamas with Joan Turnquist at Grand Bahamas Port Authority, and a little bit with Cyprian Gibson from the Water and Sewage Corporation in the Bahamas, to actually just hauling pipe across rocks to rebuild. So sometimes it can just be very physical labor, but we're there to help in any way we can, because it's wonderful that all the NGOs go in and help, and they bring in their totes and they bring in their RO systems and supply water. But the key is getting the existing utilities back and running as fast as we can. So we deploy once there's equipment and accommodation, as I say, and we work with all the other Caribbean organizations. So we've worked with CAWASA, we've worked with CWWA, Caribda has been fantastic, raising money for us, Global Water Partners, and SEDIMA. And the other thing that we do is training and mentoring. So having worked in the Caribbean for the last 12 years, and you and I know how difficult it is for many utilities in the Caribbean to access training. CAWASA puts on many, many training programs, and that's terrific. But a lot of people don't send all their people to these training programs. And so we have the same sort of model that we have in Canada when I was working with World Water, or still work with World Water and Wastewater Association, whereas we can go to the individual utilities and put on a training program for all of their operators at one time. So we're still going to work with CAWASA in running training programs. And what we have is over 70 accredited courses and accredited instructors. And so all of these have volunteered their time. So there is no cost to actually the utility for the operator or the instructor to go to there. Where we can, we ask the utilities to help with accommodation and perhaps airfare, because that means that we can have more money to go and send more teams to the disaster relief. We also do assessments of utility operations. So we've done several of those where we go in and look at their entire operations and give them hints and recommendations for efficiency and effectiveness. So we've worked so far with two disasters. I mean, we hear that there's going to be a very active hurricane season this year. So we're all praying, of course. I know that in St. Lucia, at St. Joseph, every single week now, there'll be the prayer to save us from hurricanes. And so far, St. Lucia has been successful in their prayers, and we're hoping that they'll continue to be, and for all the islands. But the two disasters that we've helped with were Dominica and the Bahamas. And Dominica, we sent one team down there, and they were helpful in working with the existing crews. Sometimes the employees are a little bit suspicious, are you coming here to try and take over our jobs? We're there strictly to help. There is nobody in Operators Without Borders that get paid. We all volunteer our time, whether it's in administration, there's no costs there, there's nothing. Everything that we're raising is going towards helping out in the Caribbean area. The Bahamas, we've sent actually five teams down there, and we were just about to send another team when COVID hit, and that put an end to that. So you're all familiar. The Bahamas was absolutely wiped out in Abaco and on the east coast of Grand Bahama Island. There's basically nothing left in those areas. So it's a question of having to reassess how we go forward. And we have people at a very, very high level who can go in and help do the assessments and make recommendations as to how that's put together. And then teams go in and work alongside, as I said, the existing teams in the Caribbean, work with their counterparts in starting to rebuild.
Well, I think you are now showing us a short video.
Yeah.
Of some of the
that work. That is Marsh Harbour, the main town in Abaco. And basically, all they did was take in bulldozers and are bulldozing the whole town. So it has to be completely rebuilt. This is two of our operators, Jason and Marcel, who work both in Grand Bahamas and also in in Dominica. And this is looking at one of the RO systems that was working to provide water. In Grand Bahamas, all of their water was compromised from this, that they're all on wells. They had a 16-foot tidal wave, storm surge that came in. All of their water was compromised. And there's Jason with some of the kids who've lost their home and were hand pulling out at this age, or you know, just trying to pull out rubble. And this is with us with Water Mission, one of the NGOs at, looking at the RO system that was built. And this is Jason, the type of things that we did. One of the NGOs wanted to build this RO system in a container so it could be moved around. They had two people from a church, a husband and wife, who were going to do this. No training in this type of work at all. And we said, we can help you. And my guys went in and did it in one day, and it worked absolutely perfectly. And Jason, if he looks a little bit hot and bothered, he was. It was very, very hot working in this small container with no air conditioning. So he was pretty white by the end of the day. But they did an absolutely fabulous job. The other thing that we do is training and mentoring. We recognize training can be expensive in the Caribbean. Very few operators are certified, despite the efforts of COWASA to lead them in that direction. And operators often have to travel for training, which adds to the expense, and they get grants, etc. And we think it's better to train groups of operators in-house, and we'd love them to work towards their certification. And COWASA, as you say, is the ABC affiliate for the Caribbean. And with the training and operating, this is the operational assessments. This is Mac, one of our very highly skilled operators who was on the webinar the other day that we gave on COVID and disasters within a disaster, going around and looking at every single piece of equipment and every treatment house, etc., in Belize. And then we came up with a big report. nurses looking at the lab that they have. That's not within a disaster, obviously. This is where we go in otherwise. So Madeline, I'm going to talk to you because we've come up with COVID, and that's put a stop to us going to all of these places. So perhaps you can talk just a little bit about your involvement and where we go from here. I think you're on mute, Madeline.
Thank you.
There we go.
Great. Yes, it's going to be a very brief introduction and I'll be handing over to Ron. I wanted to emphasize a couple of things that Valerie had said, and I think I'm kind of speaking for the board here. Yes, all that paperwork and digital administration to get to be a nonprofit took some time, and of course we have O&M to maintain it. But what's been wonderful is how meaningful those special reports that we've been getting from volunteers, where they go into the site and work with colleagues, and we can help make a difference. That's critical, and that's kept all of us board members quite passionate, I think, about being able to press on. But of course, as Valerie mentioned, we have COVID, and I'm sure we have many of us COVID stories. One of our first implications was another paperwork piece. We were putting in our application for a charitable status, and we've now discovered that it's in an emptied out building on a reviewer's desk, suspended in time. So that alerted us to the idea that we want to get back to doing the meaningful outreach if we can. And of course, the idea of doing training at a distance is where we're headed. And that's what today is really about, is considering how best to do that and finding ways of getting back to that meaningful support that we were looking towards. And there's a range of possibilities, which I think Ron is probably better able to speak to. So although I've put my adult education and distance learning hats on today, I'm going to pass it on to Ron. And then if I have any things to add, Ron, if you don't mind, I'll leap in. How does that sound? Over to you.
Welcome and thank you, everyone. Thank you, Ignatius, for doing this for us, and I'm very happy to be here. And thank you very much, Valerie. I have to say right off the bat that it's Valerie's fault that I've excelled to this point, because when she first met me, I was just an operator, and she kind of guided me along and was actually instrumental at and helping me go not only from an operator to instructor to a manager to now actually being able to offer a lot of this type of water and wastewater training through the university. So thank you, Val. Going back to that slide and talking about disaster response, and I don't want to go too much on, and thank you very much for the lovely introduction, Val. I like to always, even as an instructor, even though I've gone through a lot of different types of training, really, I'm an operator. I love to work outside. I love to work with my hands. I like to work with the guys. I get along with the guys. And that's really where my focus is. And when it comes to this type of training, although we, like in BC, Canada, even North America are very lucky in a lot of ways. My disaster response kind of led me to really, try to help more people in other ways that, not just what I'm doing up here, but if there's any way I can help those that really need it. And Val kind of encouraged me to come along, and eventually we ended up in Belize on the team there, which was, it was a great opportunity because we're doing a little bit more of pre-training. It's not necessarily disaster response training. It's more training focused on like say mentorship and training, looking at the systems, understanding the systems. But the biggest thing we've always focused on, especially me, is when we go down there to do the training, I'm not training in what we in Canada do, although we're going to go over some of that stuff as well, the safety stuff, but it's safety in general. So very important part, even when I went into Belize, was really, and it was very nice of Val to take us out on the first day and show us Belize and stuff. And of course she went to show us all the touristed areas, which she did in the islands and stuff. But honestly, all four of us, the operators, we are so focused in on the infrastructure, the water systems, the sewer systems, the power grids, how did everything work? How is it going to work? you know, if there was a disaster, how could the response be there? You know, where are the weaknesses? Where are the strengths of the system? How are the people? We wanted to know about the more stuff. You know, we want to learn as much as possible about the people, the country, the system, the infrastructure, what's existing. That's what we wanted to really see. And as Val probably says, well, you guys stop looking at the water systems all the time. Stop looking at the sewer system. Look at this. And I'm like, well, that's great, but look at this. So, but that was always been the focus, because if we're going to do any type of training, we want to make sure we're training and we understand what the system is. We understand what the guys are going through, understand the challenges. If we don't understand that, then, you know, we don't feel, you know, then I feel at least I'm being useful to some degree, if that makes any sense. It was an awesome opportunity, fantastic people, Caribbean Welcome. Yes, Ignatius, you're totally, it was fantastic. Like, the people are so gracious. And we got a camaraderie, a good group of people we got to work with. We did some great training. We shared a lot of things, because again, it's not just me coming down there with all the experience. It's all about learning. And I think it was the biggest learning experience for me. And I've caught the bug. Sorry, Val, I'll be bugging you a lot more because I can't wait to see what's next. But it was an awesome opportunity to work with everyone down there, and they were fantastic. And I hope everyone that we met in Belize, you know, our secondary family are still down there, because I still keep in touch with them, still call them, still contact them, and try to help in every way you can. So thank you.
Ron, there was 120 operators and management people that we actually trained in safety procedures while we were there in a two-week period. But that's only one of the courses. We've got 70 courses that one can talk about. But the other thing is that we have continued to work with the people. And I know that you've been working with them on their trenching and excavating problems continually in the last year.
Yeah. Thank you, Val. Yeah. And we train a lot of great operators. We continue to help them everywhere we can. We want to be able to operate or offer a virtual live system. COVID was, you know, not the best thing to happen to us, although it was in a lot of ways when it comes to response and learning, especially around pandemic. But this gives us a new focus, a new means of training, and it's forced a lot of us educational institutions up here to go more into this virtual delivery system. So that gives us more opportunity to reach more people in more ways than we've ever thought before. So really, I'm very excited about that. And that's why we have a studio that we built, a broadcast center that we built. You can see my green screen. I could put a background back there, but I just wanted to show you what it would look like without anything happening in the video. But the instruction is the technology is here today. We can do great instruction. We can do great delivery. We can do all kinds of things. Obviously, we can't do the hands-on stuff, but we can get pretty close to it with all the different types of YouTube videos and stuff that we can offer and design and build ourselves. So a lot of things we did in Belize.
I was just going to add, Ron, to the idea that there's an opportunity for continuity that may not have been available through other means, or it would be a combination of means. So that's a great description, though.
Yeah, thanks. So you definitely want to work with everyone down south. We want to help us in any way we can. So using this type of technology. There's a lot of courses that we can offer, not only safety courses around, which is mostly my focus, but obviously I teach operational courses as well as emergency response courses and rescue services courses. Most of the hands-on stuff, but operator courses, we have well over 70 courses. And they're extensive, right, from operations, from pump stations, systems, to water mains and brake repairs, to tapping, to using different types of systems. There's so many different things, from treatment, reverse osmosis, and it just goes on and on different systems. Desalinization is one of those, chemical safety. Lots of different type of operator and safety courses that we can offer through this type of format. So I think that's where it really opens the door. And I wouldn't be the only instructor. Obviously, Val's got a huge group of really good quality professional instructors, all specific in their areas of expertise. So it's excellent to be able to offer that.
Yeah, Ron, could you just tell them the
pretty good. Sorry, Val, go ahead.
I just wanted Ron to just say the difference between online education and virtual, because there's a huge difference. And I'm not very much in favor of online education for operators, but this is virtual education, which is very different.
Yes. Thank you very much, Valerie. And this is virtual education is we get to interact. So not only does the instructor, like I'm doing right now, you're seeing me, however, I'm not seeing my audience. When we do the teach and the virtual delivery, we also see the audience. So we want a webcam mic down there. I want to see the people because seeing the people makes me an instructor, and they seeing me makes them the collaboration piece work. It allows us to work and communicate and go through questions, answer things, work on problems, work on issues. We've got different types of technologies that we use, not only whiteboard, but we also have doc cams that we use. We have whiteboard systems that we can still use. So it's the idea is to do this as a virtual live classroom or virtual live delivery system that's interactive. And that's the main thing is the instructor has to be interactive with the students. Students have to be interacting with the instructor. Otherwise, like you said, Val, it becomes an online learning or it becomes a simple YouTube type format. So that's the good piece. And with this type of technology, we can definitely do it. So I hope that that answers the question.
And these courses here, they're all available for continuing education credits, which people need for certification or to continue their certification. And all the instructors are certified instructors. So Ignatius, you had a question.
Yes. So I have several questions because I want to continue because you have given us such quite a bit of information. Which we would like to share with our partners. Following up from Ron, if we, with the number of courses that you have, and if Kawasa would want to engage you, what is the process for doing that for our operators to be able to access your tutorials?
Yeah, that's something we'd set up with Val. So we want very much a custom system set up. So we communicate, find out what everybody is looking for or certain areas are looking for. And then just working with Valerie, she working with me, we can set up something and then we can go ahead. So,
jump in there, Ignatius, we've given you a list of the courses. You can say, this is the course we want. I go and find out at what time an instructor is available because our instructors all work full-time pretty well in utilities. They're all utility managers, so they're hands-on people as well as being certified instructors. So you contact us, we set up a date, we get you an instructor, and then we will set up the platform with you. Or if one of your utilities wants something, you know they make a request to you or to us, we can do it directly with the utility if they want to do a whole one. But if you want to put on a course, say on chlorination, it's a one-day course. You contact us, we get the instructor, we set it up with Ron on a date that he's available and has the training facility available. So those pieces all come together. And then, Ron, you can talk about this, but the people have to sign in. They have to show us some ID because this is a course which is accredited. And they get CEUs, so they have to hold up their ID to the camera and Ron signs them in before the class starts. And there's also a test at the end of it that they have to pass. And they have to, and the cam is on all day, I believe, Ron, so you can see that they're not just going in and out and signing in and then disappearing.
Yeah, so excellent points. And yeah, I thought I didn't elaborate on that, but thank you, Valerie. Yeah, it's verified learning. So verified learning means is that we need to know that person's there in the beginning. That's the person that signed up and registered and that throughout they're actively participating in it. And we see them throughout. So the video is a very important piece of that. And of course the test as well. And that gives your verification that that person had gone through the requirements and met all the objectives that we put forward. So I hope that answers your question, Ignatius.
Yes, thank you, it does. I'm going to go back to some of the, your disaster response support, Val, in terms of, given the experiences that you've had with your recent work in the Caribbean post disasters such as Maria and in Dorian in the Bahamas, what are some of the gaps that you have observed in the assistance that you've been giving within the task forces that are available, and perhaps what if you've seen certain gaps, what sort of partnerships or how can you be of assistance in helping to close some of these gaps with the partnerships with Kawasa, for example?
Right. One of the things that I see when we're talking disasters. You want to talk disasters or capacity building?
Well, I'm speaking first with disasters.
Right, with disasters.
Some of the challenges that you find in coming in to give support in the Caribbean post-disasters? Yeah. What are some of the challenges?
One thing that's become very obvious to me, or two things, is first, we haven't done a good enough job with the emergency response planning. So how to deal with these disasters up front. We need to revisit our planning. And I was as much at fault because before I went in and worked with disasters, I didn't know how bad things could be. So the plans I wrote weren't robust enough. So we need to revisit the plan so that we are, you know, once a disaster has hit, we know what we've got to do. And we've got to, when everything's wiped out, having a centralized command system isn't good enough. You've got to be able to have decentralized command centers where people can't, the roads are washed out. You need to be able to have people trained in communities to take over in the water and wastewater, well, every area, but I'm talking water and wastewater here. Secondly, we've got to plan for the NGOs coming in. Once a disaster hits, the NGOs just flock in. And very often, the utility, I don't think, feels that they're in charge. They need to plan for that. They need to understand what the NGOs bring to the table, what they can do, and they need to sort of take a really lead role in this. They're supposed to take a lead role, and the NGOs follow their guidance, but very often the NGOs sort of take charge. So I think that that's a really important point, is that we need to take charge of that process and have a defined plan as to how we're going to use the NGOs. Very often the operators are in shock. And so one of the things I see is that they have to deal with their homes, their own home being destroyed. They're traumatized. They've got families that are traumatized. And so the level of effort they are able to put in is sometimes fairly minimal. I know when our guys go there, sometimes, you know, we can work 12 hours a day. Our guys will go and work. So just give us tasks to do. We'd like to be involved in some of the assessments earlier on. This is a change for us a little bit, but with Grand Bahamas, Jeron Turnquist asked us to go in early and do the assessment with them. So we sent two of us most experienced operators down to have a look at all the systems and be able to help with the, you know, what needs to be done, what can be done, and then we can plan sending teams. And I think the utilities have to realize that they need to talk to their people on the ground about what we're there to do. We're there to help, we're not getting paid, and we're not trying to come in and take over systems and come back. We can do the capacity building, but we are not there for any gain whatsoever. Everybody is a volunteer, and I think that that is a point that the utility managers have to make. And I really believe working with CWWA and CAWASA, we can be utilized much more than we have been. We have the skills, we have the people, we have people just saying, here, how can we help? But we're very often underutilized. So planning beforehand, if the hurricane season's coming, getting a hold of us and saying, okay, if this happens, what can you do for us? What's going to be the process? And then getting a dialogue going early on. Sometimes the people have very good skills. Sometimes they're more on the operational level and don't have some of the higher level skills. So we can help with that. It just depends very much on what the situation is on the ground, who you've got there, what the training is that they've had, and are they have they got the capabilities of putting that there. So it's getting together as a holistic group, you know, the integrated water resource management model. Everybody getting together and talking about what's best to be done and then getting on with it. Just letting us get on there and work as hard as we can to put these utilities up and running. I think that we can help utilities once they get the equipment to get up and running perhaps a lot quicker than they could just on their own.
Wanted to add to what Val was saying. It sounds like we're distinguishing entirely between capacity building and assistance with disaster relief. And I think when we do go into the disaster relief, we do try and build in capacity building as well. It just can't be the main focus at that time. Would that be correct, Val?
Yes, yeah. So when Marcel and Jason were in Dominica, they did do some training. Now, we were supposed to be going back, and that didn't actually happen. But they said, you know, the wastewater treatment plant, they helped get that up and running. And they said that a lot of the guys hadn't been trained enough to actually run that on an ongoing basis. They actually hadn't been running, I think, too well before the disaster. So it would be really great to go back and identify these problems and actually do the training and help the people, once things are put back together, to be able to run them properly. Yeah,
that's the idea of continuity that I was speaking to. Right. So yeah. Important not to just go in, plug yourself in for 5 minutes and then head out again, which we always want to do, be supportive.
Does that answer that question, or a follow-up question, Ignatius?
Yeah, well, that pretty much answers it. Of course, I mean, the challenge you face, as you well appreciate, is that during an event as a Cat 5, where everything has been blown away, people are traumatized, I mean, you want to get back. The pressure is to restore the water services immediately, or as soon as you can, so people cannot be contaminated with any disease or anything. But so it's not usually the kind of period where you would do the type of training or helping to build capacity, except whilst doing that, some of the guys may be alongside you.
But it's mentoring.
Yeah.
Mentoring as we go. Yes.
So as you quite rightly said, it would require for us to continue with follow-up actions by way of specific capacity building. But something you mentioned is about the reviewing, and as we're preparing for the hurricane season, we've just started it. We're into it already. We're into June. And whether it would be possible, maybe through such virtual means, to stage a forum where we can discuss some of the sort of preparedness that you may wish to recommend based on the observations you have.
Well, I did a presentation on lessons learned from Hurricane Dorian for the university conference that they put on in Grand Bahamas on rethinking emergency planning. And I'd be happy to put that on for your members and expand upon it. It was just a very brief presentation in their conference, but together with some of our other, you know, like Ron and Greg, and other people who've been down there, Marcel, we'd be happy to put something on for you.
Okay. The other question I think I would have asked Ron, I think he might be the one to deal with that, was you mentioned the Incident Command Center and system, which is one of these training programs that you do have. So I don't know if you would wish to elaborate on the whole Incident Command System just briefly, and you know how it operates and what you offer.
Okay, perfect. And this is the perfect time for that as well. That's my other life, is actually emergency response, especially when it comes to those type of natural disasters that go beyond the capacity of the existing first responder system that already exists within a country. And that's where the heavy search and rescue system comes in, and why it's considered a task force. And that blends right into incident command system itself. So natural disaster response, Valerie had a great conversation around that, is first step is always to identify the issues, look at what's happened in the past in other places, other countries, what's going on, and then be able to learn from those lessons and be able to build a capacity and a structure so that way, if a disaster does come, that you have a command structure in place that is easy and organized to understand whose responsibility is, whether it's going to be a town or cities, municipal responsibility, regional, is it going to be the whole region that's going to take on this or that responsibility? And what about the countrywide? How are they going to help? So it clearly identifies that. And it was developed, and I'll go real quick, it was developed back in the late 60s, early 70s in California, when everybody was trying to respond to a bunch of wildfires, but nobody was organized enough to do it properly or correctly. So everybody's fumbling over everyone. Nobody's communicating on the proper wave. Everybody had their own different systems. It was very, very unorganized. And we have so much organization in our work and every day that we do. It's really a shame when it comes to emergency response, we can't have that same organization. And that's where incident command falls in. It's a command system and a structure that works. It's universal. It's adopted by Well, it's obviously started in the States, adopted by Canada, by INSEROG, which is United Nations, adopted by European countries, adopted by Brazil. There's a lot of areas that have adopted the incident command system simply because it's simple, has certain levels to it, and it has an organization structure that has the framework. You can put that right into your natural disaster, and it gives everyone regional, municipal, and countries responsibilities, what the public utility is responsible for. You know, it outlines all of that throughout the system, and it gives you that clear structure. Does that kind of give you the quick overall, Ignatius, answer? Whoops, you're, Kent.
I had my mic off, sorry. Yes, I'm saying yes, it did. And at least in a nutshell, because this program doesn't give us all the time to elaborate, but certainly it is one of these areas we are going to hope to continue the collaboration with Operators Without Borders and perhaps offer this course to our members in the near future. But I think also that, you have had some, Operators Without Borders offers several other bits of training, as you mentioned earlier. And it is important that we can find ways to improve on some of the systems we have during post-disaster events. And so we would like to follow up with Operators Without Borders and doing that. Valerie, are there any areas, for example, that you think we can, what can we do to help to expedite the intervention of responders or volunteers who are going to come into the region like yourselves? What are some of the lessons? Well, I know it's going to be very detailed, as you said, some lessons that you had learned. But what are some of the things that we may be able to do to help to facilitate the process?
I think if COWASA can put on some of these seminars and again make it interactive, perhaps not having them, 50 people, we can do more than one, but keeping it to a smaller group where we can actually have some interaction, or even doing it, if you can set it up with an individual utility. We're going to be putting on the Incident Command System program, I believe, in Belize for their work group. Belize is always one of the utilities that hops on everything immediately and takes advantage of it. But we can do it in two ways. You can send it out to people and say, this is available, and we can work with those individual utilities. And of course, it's based on, we can only do as many as our volunteers who are working full-time can do. But we can also do it through COWASA, where you put out a date. And I think we've set a date possibly for July 22nd for doing a half-day incident command system that will go into some of these things. And members can sign up, and that they don't have to just do it in-house. They can do it through COWASA on a program. And I believe you're going to be sending out information on that. But setting up dialogue, I think perhaps even... at your, if you're doing a virtual conference in July, I don't know, normally you have your operator conference in July, putting on a presentation, but really having a dialogue with these operators as to what their needs are, both on disaster preparedness and on capacity building. Showing, you could send out the list of the 70 odd courses and see what ones that you want to put on through COWASA, and then what ones they would like to do in-house. And I'm very much in favor of in-house, because what very often happens, as you know, Ignatius, you get a grant from IDB or CDB to put on a training program. And all your 13 utilities sends one person to it, or maybe if it's in Barbados, they'll send four, or St. Lucia, wherever, they send a few more. But that person goes back, and they're, as I say, the voice crying in the wilderness sometimes. It is not embedded in the culture. Whereas if we go in and we train the whole team, as Ron did in Belize with their safety, that then becomes the standard operating procedures. We help them with a standard operating procedure if they need, if they don't have one, but it embeds it. And this is what needs to be done. This training needs to be embedded in their culture. It can't be just one person who knows it and they go back and their boss says, oh, we don't do it like that. And it doesn't, the training is not really getting through to where it needs to get through. So that's where I think that Kiwassa could really help.
I wanted to speak to two things there because Val is bang on, this is my background, continuing professional education. And we in that area have, you know, discussed, what are the benefits of conferences versus customized specific training? If with the conference, you're looking for being able to share knowledge amongst each other and find out about what's new in terms of what people are doing, that's great. But as Val said, it really is a matter of trying to contextualize and have a more detailed, customized version that is easier on the instructor as well. Because if they're trying to imagine, you know, 15 different systems, it's a real challenge. Whereas if you go in, as Val said, and embed it, it's a whole different story. The intensity of the learning is much better, but also the practicality of it, because they'll be able to use it immediately. And one of the issues I often have is with courses, you go and you went, wow, that was really interesting, I understood it. But the next day, trying to remember it or have what we call learning retention is a whole nother story. So the embedded is definitely the way that people will continue to be able to use those practices and remember them.
Yeah, brilliant. I think it is the way to go. And particularly now, everybody, as we are using the technology that we have before us now, and I think COVID has forced everybody into that mode. And so that is excellent. We have started recently a series of webinars for our water operators on once a week. And that is to just retain the interest because of the restrictions of travel, et cetera, to fly in trainers to the different territories or vice versa. It makes all sense, and it will keep our costs down considerably if we are able to offer such embedded programs, albeit virtually in first instance. And we would be pretty pleased to have one of your, maybe someone like Ron, speaking to something like confined spaces in a 1 hour webinar sometime soon when he's available. And some other areas. So we can also collaborate along those lines and would love to with you, Valerie, through your Operators Without Borders. I think there are lots of opportunities for doing that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. We can certainly do that. And it doesn't mean that we're not going to come back in person when we can and go to different countries like we did in Belize. And we were set up to do Antigua with Ian Lewis and Tesla and their people. We were going to do training there. Ron was actually had his flight booked, and with one day to go, we had to cancel it. We couldn't get him back into Canada if he'd have gone. Although he'd have been, you know, locked down in Antigua, probably wouldn't have been too bad. But those are really good points. We can do the 1 hour seminars, we can do that. But we will, even if we do some training virtually, we can always send somebody down later and do mentoring, because one of the things I want to see is getting away from just the classroom training. And Madeline and Ron would know this. And I know Kalpner was on the line earlier. And we've worked very much with the EOCP, and Kalpner Salaki is on our board. So we've worked very closely with all of those people to say, what's the best type of training that we can do? And having the mentoring where you're with somebody on their equipment and can show them how to do things, that's always going to be the best. But that can come later when COVID is all history.
Well, and I was going to say, Val, that when you do that, it doesn't mean that you can't leave and still maintain contact through the tools that we're now establishing. So it could very much be a mixed program.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. And just to elaborate a little bit on that too, is as much as I love to instruct and teach and collaborate with the guys, I also like to follow up and say, hey, how is it going? How did that work for you guys? What are the challenges that you're finding? And then there's some more learning pieces behind that, is because now as they start to build that safety structure, they need that little bit of reinforcement to continue that to go in the right direction, or otherwise it's just what we call as being forgotten. And
exactly.
When it's forgotten, we revert back to where we were. And then I feel like, you know, we haven't accomplished as much as we could have potentially. And a lot of the safety training too, and like Val was mentioned too, is we're very excited to come out. We want to meet the people in person, of course. We can do as much, a lot of it virtually. That really opens the doors. I always say the solidified learning comes when, you know, when we actually put what we call a hands-on or practical component to it. We can do all the theory, we can do everything else, but until we touch it, feel it, and put it into action, then it becomes, you know, almost a learned habit, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
It solidifies that piece. And although I didn't have much an opportunity in Belize, I really like to do the emergency response piece too. Is preparing if something goes wrong, you know, what are the opportunities? What can we do? What there's so many things that can go wrong. And Ignatius, you mentioned that water is a very important piece of that infrastructure. I know in natural disasters for us, schools and hospitals are hospitals number one, road clearing and hospital. We've got to be able to get people to the place they need to get to. You know, once the hospitals are up and running, because that's where the people are going, the schools, because of course that's where children are, especially if it's in the middle of the day, take a while, guess what the parents are doing, it's the worry. So schools are very important. And then once those are done, then we go straight to our infrastructure. And power is one of the few things we don't worry too much about yet. It's always water, and I hate to say it, sewer. People forget about sewer, because just as much as water is clean, like you mentioned it, sewer is the one that's going to contaminate it. So you can have all the clean water in the world, but if you got sewage lying everywhere, you're opening yourself up for just a variety of different diseases and bacterial infections. So, and hospitals have to be there and prepared for it. And most of the time, countries in shock, the emergency responders are in shock, everyone is in shock. So the more outside help you can get, the better you're going to be. And they found that out right away. Many natural disasters have happened. Like we did a very big one on New Zealand with Christchurch, just because of the earthquake. Vancouver has very similar geographical system. So when they had natural disaster, they thought it was water. Actually, it was sewer, because people were taking water from the sewer manholes and using it for food preparation, which we know is not a good thing. So lots of good learning things, and then I'd be excited to help in any way I can.
Yeah, so I think we've had a fabulous last 50 minutes of conversation, and I'm sure that we will be keeping in touch, and we always in touch with Valerie. But I think there are exciting possibilities for the future. As we going to wrap up, I will just ask you now for some closing final words from each of you.
Madeline, do you want to start? You're on mute. Not hearing you, Madeline. There we go.
Yeah. Okay, now, thank you so much for inviting us. It's been a wonderful opportunity to also learn more about what you're up to, Ignatius, and what Kawasa is doing. And we hope that we will have a great conversation. There's so many opportunities and possibilities. And I want to thank Val for her kind introduction. And I look forward to working with Ron and Val further in terms of what we can do to be of more help. Thanks.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Thank you, Ignatius, for allowing even myself and us to have this opportunity to be able to do this with you guys. And we're happy to help in any way we possibly can. I've already informed Val. I'll make myself as available as possible. And whatever I can do, I'd be happy to help. And I really appreciate this. Thank you very much. And thank you, Val.
I like that studio you have, Ron. So I think we may start a collaboration in building such a studio for me.
we could do that. I'm building one more for another client.
Ignatius, that's something I've been talking to Kawasa about for a long, long time, 10 years, I think, having a virtual classroom there. But the woman gets the last word. So thank you, Ignatius. It is wonderful to work with you. We've known each other a long time, and I'm really grateful for this opportunity. I would also like to just point out that with you see three of us here, we're backed by a very good board, Robert Halifan, CWWA, Kaupner from the Environmental Operator Certification Program, who has done a fabulous job in promoting and doing a lot of stuff and supporting us financially as well as we get going. And Carl Yates, recently retired general manager of Halifax Water and one of the most senior people in the industry in Canada. Ron is on our deployment committee. We have several fantastic operators on that, and they're all the volunteers that work. So I have to, without them, there wouldn't be anything. So it's been a wonderful opportunity working with everybody. And we are very, very excited about the future opportunities as we get better known, that people can come to us and access free training. and we build the capacity in the Caribbean. So
right.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for giving us your time. I think it's still very early morning in Canada. And we wish you could have been enjoying some of our sunshine down here, but we really appreciated the contribution you've made this morning. Suzanne sends her best wishes, and she's sitting next door. We're a small team with Suzanne and myself running Kawasa. And our directors are our president, Mr. Christopher Husbands of Nawasa in Grenada. We have our vice president, Mrs. Perlin Scatliff of the Water and Sewage Department of the British Virgin Islands. And our treasurer is the general manager of WASCO, the Water and Sewage Company in St. Lucia. The secretary is now Mr. Garth Saunders of the CWSA, Central Water and Sewage Authority of St. Vincent and the Grenadines. And Mr. Bernard Etinoff, of course, is our immediate past president of the WASCO, the Dominica Water and Sewage Corporation. And they all give us a lot of the support with, you know, our membership, which is about 13 member utilities in the Caribbean. But we do collaborate with all the other utilities in the region and through the CWWA, who are the professional body. And we offer the ABC examinations. And we have started a virtual tutorial program as well. We've just completed the first cohort of doing the water distribution level one. So we hope through this partnership, we will be able to enhance what we are doing. And one of the best things, though, that happens for water operators, and as you said, it's when, you know, things are embedded and operators can pick up the phone and follow up and make contact with their partners across the borders. And that really helps to strengthen how utilities work. And one of our good partners has been the Global Water Operators Partnerships Alliance, GWAPA, of the United Nations Habitat Program. And we have been trying to do quite a bit. Of course, sometimes in the Caribbean, because of how the travel is so difficult and the cost of travel, now that we are emerging through these technologies, are able to reach out even better. So we hope, again, what you're doing is quite in sync with what we are doing through the GWAPA, the WAPLAC, and of course the CARIWAP being CWWA and Kawasa. So I would like to thank you again very much. And we are going to sign off now and look forward to future collaborations. Have a good day, everybody.
Thank you. And in the words of our medical health officer, who just made the New York Times for the way she's handled the COVID epidemic, I will sign off. Be calm, be safe, be kind.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.